On this episode of The Social Hour, we have an official social media day. Do you know when it is? Plus, Airbnb wants to get smarter about your data. And is Lego Fusion rad or fad? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 170, recorded June 19th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Still back in Toronto. I guess, where have I been since we did the show last week?
You know, you were somewhere. You were on a different set of some kind. I didn't even ask you where you were.
You know what? You're right. I knew I was somewhere different. I was actually just in my dining room. So Chris wanted to see what it looked like if I set up in our dining room. And it looked a bit different. But then I came back here because it was easier in our little basement studio. So that's what I was thinking. And I think I was in Nashville a couple days before that. So anyway, all's good. It's summertime in Toronto, Sarah. Great weather. Patio time for
Things
sure.
Things are looking up. You know, Amber, I agreed to be part of a conference, which I think I've mentioned to you. It's like at the end of July, it would take place in Toronto.
Cool. So
if all goes well, then I don't know, we'll have a big party or something.
Yeah, you have to keep me posted on that. It's
a
great city, and summertime's a perfect time to be here.
Exactly. And Toronto, I've heard it's a very international city, and they got great food. Just say the word food, and I'm in. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Right.
But enough about us. Let's talk about some of the news that we've got going on over the last week. Okay, so this one is kind of fun. We have an official social media day, Amber, and I don't know where that came from, but I have to assume 5 years ago there was no such thing.
Yes, yeah, so I think you're exactly right. So there is an official social media day. That day is June 30th of every year. It looks like, based on this Mashable article, that this was something that Mashable had started a few years ago, and eventually people just kind of jumped on and they loved the idea. And so now what cities around the world can do, they can actually go to their government and say, you know what, we'd like you to declare an official social media day to take place on June 30th. And in fact, that is what many cities around the world have in fact done to bring communities together online, get people chatting using all the different social media platforms out there. On the Mashable site, and we'll put this into our show notes, they have examples of proclamations by mayors across the U.S. who have said that this is in fact the social media day of the year, and they talk a little bit within this about the celebration.
I guess I like it as much as I like National Donut Day, which, by the way, was a thing, at least in the U.S., like a couple weeks ago. Sometimes it's like, okay, sure, it's a day of celebration. I feel like I celebrate social media every day, even if I'm not really celebrating it. I'm certainly using it. Sure, why not?
I think one thing it probably does do, though, Sarah, is it forces governments, especially within municipalities, to start to take social media seriously and kind of put it on their radar if they haven't already. I mean, most local governments have, but I think this is just a step in the right direction, again, to get them communicating through these different channels.
I like it. Yeah, especially since I would say on at some sort of a government level is those. Well, I don't want to say anything that would be deprecating it. I guess it's sometimes when you get into the government sector, it is not necessarily the most savvy social media group of people, if that makes sense. So it is a raising awareness type of a thing. And yeah, that can be good for outreach and obviously just sort of the communities that these folks represent. It's all very official, though, isn't it?
It is all very official. So people take this stuff very seriously, and it's kind of fun. I think, like I said, it's interesting if it brings cities together. But if you want to get more technical, I think this next story from Airbnb is also super interesting, especially when it comes to data and how people are collecting data to provide you with really detailed recommendations for services.
So what's Okay. So Airbnb, for anybody who's not familiar, is a way that if I had owned a house or an apartment or something like that, I could rent it out to somebody. And Airbnb provides kind of the middleman service. You see a lot of photos. Amber says, I'd like to come to San Francisco. Ooh, Sarah's house looks very nice. There's a transaction. I decide how much money I want somebody to spend per night to stay in my place. And I've actually never rented out anything because I myself am a renter, and I think that that would be breaking my lease agreement. But I have stayed in quite a few Airbnbs over the last few years. In fact, I'm going to in France in just a few weeks. And it works really well, but it sounds like, Amber, if I'm understanding this correctly, Airbnb wants to be a little bit more of a, based on your past history and the kind of person you are, based on your data, we can recommend more than just this infrastructure so that you can find the right apartment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very similar to what Amazon had done in the early days when they would recommend other books that you like. So Airbnb is doing the same sort of thing. After they've been able to gather data in terms of how you use the site, what type of places you book, the duration of your stays, and all those other details, they are then in turn taking that data. They're trying to figure out what you would want before you even know perhaps you want it. And I mean, I think this is what a lot of companies are trying really hard to do. But I think in this case, it probably works well because I know with Airbnb, when you do search for accommodations in a certain city, you get so much information. So I like the idea that they're working harder to make it a lot more personalized.
You know, Airbnb is, and this is not totally new, they've got these really nice neighborhood guides, not for every city, although Seoul looks like it's new. But okay, so let's say I've never been to South Korea. I don't really know anything about Seoul. I know it's a really big city. But they do a pretty good job already of, it's not just, hey, browse a bunch of apartments. They kind of go the extra mile to let you know that there are a variety of different neighborhoods, what they're known for. They've got these nice tags. Hongdae apparently is fashion forward. And Party Central, ooh, with indie bands. That sounds like the right neighborhood for me. And then you can, there is a lot of context, I feel like, is going into this. It definitely gives a, it's kind of curated by some sort of a team, you know, the Airbnb experts. And maybe it's just because Airbnb is, they've got a big office in San Francisco, and I know a few people who work there, but it's a pretty big company. It's not just a few people, you know, writing some code. So I like where they're going with this, especially Amber, since, speaking of municipalities, there are a lot of cities that have serious issues with Airbnb and are trying to figure out how to properly tax people who are renting out stuff on Airbnb because it technically is bringing down the pool for the regular renters who are, you know, people like me who are into signing your leases. So it's an interesting sort of space that they're trying to capture. And I think it's probably smart to, sure, let's talk about apartments, but then there are all sorts of things in this sharing economy that Airbnb could turn into. Maybe not with that name, but it's a, you know, Amazon didn't used to mean anything either.
You're exactly right. I mean, and they are a big company, and I didn't realize this, but based on the article, which is written by our friend Matthew Ingram, who we love, Airbnb also has a lot of customers. I mean, they say that Airbnb books more than a million guests into rooms, apartments, and houses every single month. So that's a significant amount of customers who are coming and using the service on a regular basis. So I'm sure people will be happy. It'll just be a matter of, you know, how precise is this new feature that they're adding to Airbnb in terms of being able to predict what you want.
I like it, but maybe I'm just used to getting a lot of recommendations. I just feel like if I'm going to stay in an apartment in Paris and I really enjoy it and there's sort of a rating system and I can write a nice review, wouldn't it be nice if the next time I'm back in that city, Airbnb says, here are like five places that are really on par with where you stayed before. And, you know, that's better to me than looking through 300 places and trying to figure it out on my own.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. I mean, especially when it comes to the quality of those places, right? In terms of, do you like luxury accommodations or do you want something that's really basic? And I think being able to, if they can figure out what type of accommodations you want in that sense, I think a lot of people would find that very helpful. Because I know I don't use Airbnb a lot. I used it recently to book accommodations for my brother's wedding in Halifax this summer to find a house for our whole family. And it was kind of interesting. You know, we were looking for a certain type of house that was big enough to be able to fit our massive family. It wasn't easy to be able to find find that. And when we did, you know, I don't know if we got the level of the house that we really wanted as far as it being, you know, something that had some of those little perks and I think things that we may look for on a regular basis.
Oh, this is something that you've already been to.
I'm looking online and basically I was looking, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's, I think they can improve the search overall, just being able to gather more information. I didn't find the search process really to be all that useful. So I think it could get better over time.
Yeah. And it's probably exactly that where the company's saying, we probably want to almost give you less choice. Not because you shouldn't have choice, but you're kind of like, I already know what I want, and I don't want to spend too much time looking through all these listings. Maybe there's some other category that they can help you filter through. Well, exactly. I hope you find the perfect house.
I hope it's a good one. Me too.
All right, let's move on to, you know, the Mattel, a company that makes Barbie dolls. They just won't quit. They're always good at trying to figure out the latest Barbie trends and jumping on them. The latest is Entrepreneur Barbie, Amber. Do I have this right?
Oh my. Yes, you do. I know. It's a, you know, this is a weird article. I just saw it this morning. And when I first read it, I had the same reaction that you just had, was kind of a sigh. And then I thought, you know what? That's ridiculous. I really need to read the article and dig into this more. Because the truth is, historically, if you think about Barbie, she's always been this character who hasn't necessarily really personified a businesswoman, right? And
we've
maybe attacked her for that. So I think I want to believe that this is a good move. So I'm trying to go with it and understand it. But the interesting thing from a social media standpoint is that Entrepreneur Barbie comes with a smartphone. She has her own tablet and she also has a LinkedIn profile. So they're taking it into the social space.
I wonder what LinkedIn, you know, there must be some sort of money changing hands in order for Entrepreneur Barbie to have a LinkedIn profile. Not that that doesn't make sense. It does. But that's interesting. Considering that, you know, three-year-old girls are going to be like, ooh, I want a LinkedIn profile now too. Barbie has one. But yeah, I guess you can't fault the company for saying, all right, well, this is a thing that, you know, little girls and boys who play with Barbies might, you know, want to strive to be. I can remember however long ago, it was probably a while ago now, that there was the Barbie who said that math is hard, which is now just sort of like this joke that's part of our vernacular. I mean, I remember that started with a Barbie doll and, it, you know, a bunch of people got up in arms about the fact that it's like you're teaching girls that math is hard and then they're just going to think that they're not good at math and they're not going to achieve goals that they're totally capable of achieving. So, sure. Entrepreneur Barbie. Look at this, though. For our audio listeners, we're looking at a photo of a bunch of different Barbies, you know, different colored hair, blah, blah, blah. And they're in a variety of, I don't know, outfits that I guess can be part of entrepreneurship. Sure. Okay, they look pretty put together. And then there's a hashtag, unapologetic, which is a little bit strange to me because it's like, what are they? I didn't think they were apologizing. Are they unapologetic for being go-getters?
I don't know what that means. That part is a little weird, the hashtag. Yeah, I think it's unapologetic for being smart. I don't know. The whole thing is weird. I really don't understand that piece of the puzzle here. But yeah, you know, she's quite fancy, this Entrepreneur Barbie. You know, as an entrepreneur, I'm not sure you, like right now, I mean, I don't know if I'd ever have time to look as good as she does, but maybe
yeah, no
I'm
kidding.
Just jealous.
Yeah, Sarah. Well, you know, you've seen my hair situation today. I mean, who's got the time? Real busy
time.
Real busy people look like they're busy. All right. Well, Entrepreneur Barbie. Amber, I had a Barbie doll collection when I was younger. I always ended up cutting their hair and then it didn't look good. And then I would just be like, well, she's ruined because, of course, her hair doesn't grow back. So that's my little story, my Barbie story.
You know what's really interesting about this story is the article and a stat in the article, which I think may surprise some people. And this may be one of the reasons they decided to come out with Entrepreneur Barbie is if you look at one of the paragraphs from the Today.com article, it says, since the 1990s, the increase in the number of female-owned businesses has far outpaced the growth of those owned by men, according to a Forbes report. And 41% of women are now their family's primary breadwinners.
Well,
that is a significant change over the past few decades since I was playing with Barbies. I mean, that's a
very
significant change. So I think in that sense, it makes sense.
It does. Yes, absolutely. It does. It makes sense. We're just living in different times now.
Different times.
Different
totally
times.
Different
evolving times. Times aren't so different. They're just getting more unapologetic. Okay, let's move on to the app of the week. You found this, and Amber, I'm excited because I don't know what Magicam is. I'm going to download it right now while you're talking about it.
This app just came out. This is from Lisa Bettany and her team who came out with Camera Plus. So Camera Plus was obviously a massive hit. A lot of people love that app. Millions and millions of people downloaded it. Well, they just came out with Magicam. And this is kind of a almost like a simplified version of Camera Plus. And I say that, and that's not exactly accurate, because the truth is that it doesn't have all of the features of Camera Plus. And what it does is it has just really a couple of features for people who just want to take a picture, hit one button to improve that picture and to increase what it looks like, and to also add filters and those type of things, and then share it on social. So it's almost like a one button push to be able to finish your photo versus Camera Plus, which enabled you to do a whole lot more within that app.
I think they are probably onto something here. Oh yeah, there's Lisa. Gosh, I haven't seen her in a long time. I think they're onto something here, because Camera Plus used to be, when Camera Plus was first introduced a couple years ago, it was like the photo app to have. It helped you edit and add filters, and it was this whole thing. It was totally my world. This is, it predated Instagram. We didn't even really have a social network to share these photos, but it was absolutely just my app. Then not only did it have a lot of competition, but I did start to find that it had so many features that I wasn't using that I felt like it was almost, I don't know, it was overkill in a way. Or you could kind of go overboard with all of your options, and then you've got these HDR photos and they just look a little too much. And, you start being that person who can't take a good photo. You can only put a lot of filters on the photo afterwards. So, yeah, maybe they found that to be the case as well. As people all over the world just have more smartphones in general, they don't necessarily need this really robust program. They just need something that's like, let's magically make this photo a tiny bit better.
Yeah, and probably a different audience too, right? I mean, I would imagine there would be an even larger audience for something like Magicam because of the simplicity of it. Even when you look on the iTunes page, when they describe how the app actually works, the fourth screenshot on that page says, it's so simple, we don't even need a fifth screenshot. Or sorry, the fifth screenshot says that. So they're really pushing the idea of simplicity, that you can basically choose to tap one of a number of different moods that can capture the feeling that you're also having at the moment that you're taking the photo. So I like it. I mean, I think that because of their history with Camera Plus, chances are that they'll have a lot of success with this and, again, be able to attract a different audience.
Well, I took a really horrible picture of the corner of our set, which that's what it looks like. But automatically, this is the original photo. And automatically, it just sort of said, like, you could do with a little bit of richness. And I think, that kind of works. Kind of changed the white balance a little bit. But like you said, there's moods. This is kind of fun. You've got envious. I guess that sort of gives it a little bit of a green tinge. Aha. Or melancholy, which I guess would be, it's kind of like a sepia type thing. But but really, it's a matter of let's clean it up a little bit. That's sort of like the magic thing. And then you've got your moods. And then you've got your sharing options, which are many. You can open in Camera Plus and kind of go a little bit more nuts. That's a nice feature. Our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, just kind of the whole thing. What if I open in something else? Let's see what other options gives me. Okay, so this is actually kind of nice. The app is smart enough to know that I've got all these other photo apps that I might want to open this in. That's also good. So it's basically like it's your first pass. Maybe Magicam is all you need, and maybe you want to send it somewhere else too. It's great.
Yeah, it's really great. And I mean, I have to tell you, Sarah, that after downloading so many apps over the past few years, I really like downloading apps from companies that already have a proven track record and have done well with their apps. There's just a comfort level with it, I think. So I think a lot of other people will feel that way too.
Magicam, brand new. As usual, Amber scoops me, even though I'm supposed to know everything there is to know about iPhone apps.
Actually, I found that on Lisa Bettany's Google Plus page, so there's another reason to be on Google Plus, because she had announced it there. Otherwise, probably wouldn't have found it.
Well, that's exactly the things you miss. The things you miss. And, she and I are Facebook friends. She probably announced it there, too. But with Facebook's weird news feed algorithm, Leo and I were just talking about this the other day. I'm pointing at him like he's sitting there. He's not. But he said, I never see anything from you on Facebook. Why? Yeah. Why doesn't Facebook know by now that we're connected enough that I would like to see your updates? Like, I have to go to your page in order to see what you've shared. And it's like, it's the same way with me and a lot of other people. I don't understand why Facebook surfaces certain people so much and others not as much. But that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, I don't think they do a very good job of that either. So, okay, so speaking of something that does do a good job, there's this new little tool out there for our tip of the week, and it's called Twitter Draw. It's pretty basic, okay? But if you're running a contest on Twitter and you have to randomly select someone to be the winner, maybe you're randomly selecting that person based on a hashtag that you're using or a tweet ID number, then you can easily use this tool to be able to go in and pick that person.
Okay, so this is kind of... It's kind of funny because just the other day, a former co-host of mine, Kevin Pereira, I used to work with him at G4 down in Los Angeles. He was doing some sort of like he had some game codes. It was something to do with E3. It was a game that he had codes for, and I think it's like a pre-release thing, and people were going really crazy, and he was saying, you know, if you tweet at me, you know, a picture of your lunch or something like that, you know, maybe I'll choose you. And then he and I just happened to be talking about something else. And so he tweeted, you know what? Sarah Lane is just going to pick one of you because I don't feel like it. You know, he sort of like threw me under the bus. And so I said, okay, tweet me your grill, which to me meant teeth. A lot of people tweeted pictures of their barbecue grills, which was fine. And I ended up picking somebody. But the thing was, is I felt weird about it because I didn't really know who any of these people were. And something like this would have actually been better because it's a random picker. So I didn't, you know, have to feel guilty or like I, you know, liked one person better than the other.
Yeah. And I mean, I think based on Twitter and Facebook, a lot of these different platforms have very specific rules around contesting and what you're allowed to do and what you aren't allowed to do. And many times they do insist that you have a random draw, and it's just a more fair way for you to go in and to be able to pick someone. So this is a really simple way to be able to do that. And also, I don't know if you knew this, Sarah, you probably did, but that every single tweet has a unique ID number at the end of it. I think you click on details and get to that ID number. So you can also pick based on that ID number. If you tweeted something out and you want to randomly pick someone who retweeted it, for example, you would use that specific ID number. So another little tip to get in there, but it's a free tool, really simple to use, and I think it will change the way you're able to manage your contest because you don't have to go and track everybody who's retweeting it, put all of their handles into a spreadsheet, and then choose that way.
I like it. Twitter Draw, twitterdraw.com. And, you know, it's funny. It's yet another way that a third-party service makes something useful out of Twitter data that Twitter doesn't actually do on its own, but you never know. Maybe they're ripe for acquisition.
It's true.
Amber, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just quickly before you go on, we just got a tweet from Gardner on Twitter who was talking about the Facebook comments we made when we were talking about things rising up in the news feed. And he says, Facebook has started making World Cup Facebook news stories show up after one day for me. It's incredibly annoying. And he's losing control about it or something along those lines. So Facebook is pushing those updates, I guess, at him within his feed, even though he doesn't want them, and making them rise to the top. And I can't imagine anything more annoying. So there you go.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a tough one because it's sort of this global trending topic that Facebook understands a lot of people do care about. And they want kind of to... It's like, yeah, they want that to rise to the top because they figure more people than usual would care about that sort of story. But yeah, for whatever reason you don't, you know that that's an artificial... weighting of stories because that's not what you want to see at the top of. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, Twitter's doing quite a bit of experimenting with World Cup stuff as well. They've got this whole World Cup area. If at least you're using the official Twitter app or web version of Twitter. I'm pretty into the World Cup, but I don't think I'm hanging out on social media all that much talking about it.
No, me neither. But if you're not into it, again, I mean, I think it could be kind of frustrating. Most people are into it. But I think, again, it just goes back to the point that I wouldn't say that Facebook is the best at doing this in any way in terms of trying to manipulate what rises up in the newsfeed. It never seems to work out for them, unfortunately.
No, not really. All right. So let's take a moment to thank a sponsor because we haven't done that yet. But I'm very excited because it's Audible and we love Audible. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. Do you know what Audible is? Probably. But if you don't, It's the leading provider of audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 titles, which go across literature, fiction, nonfiction, the whole gamut. Audible is the place to find the audiobook of your choice. And if you are a viewer or a listener of The Social Hour, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. This is actually something that you really want to take advantage of. Anthony right now is maybe going to listen to The Maltese Falcon, which is almost exactly 8 hours long. That's a cool thing about Audible is not only do you go, oh, that's, you know, this is a classic, right? Have you ever read The Maltese Falcon? Maybe you've seen the movie. I've not read it. I have to admit, I haven't. So this is kind of cool. You get a little synopsis of what the, you know, book's about. There's a bunch of ratings that's user-generated. It's obviously, that's easy to figure out. You've got your length, who it's narrated by. You can get more information. You can play a little sample of the audio and just kind of get a sense of the cadence and the voice that you'll be listening to. And it is fun to read books this way. And I've had arguments with people who say, well, it's not exactly reading, but it's like, no, it actually is. Because you're still, when you hear words, you do form them in your head in an interesting way. And you can do a lot of other stuff at the same time. You can be commuting. You can be, I don't know, doing housework. You could be on a nice long walk. All that stuff. Audible is great for books because a lot of us just aren't doing a lot of reading, but we have time and we're a captive audience enough to listen to a book. So you can download a book of your choice completely free by going to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. That's audiblepodcast.com/social hour and get that free book at any point. You will never have to give that book back. You get that book. It's downloaded. It's yours for life, which you should really take advantage of because you're going to love Audible and you get that free book. So thanks so much to Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. And again, that's audiblepodcast.com/social hour. All right, Amber, let's we've got a tweet, actually, from JanusQ7. He is a regular in our chat room. And what does he have to say to us?
So he is just letting us know that LinkedIn has launched a new job search app for the iPhone. So another new app that has come out, and this is specific, like he says, just for job search. Very interesting little app. Also, a little stat here from the LinkedIn blog saying that applicants who apply to job opportunities on the first day they're posted are 10% more likely to land the job. So that's very handy. And the app itself, I haven't downloaded it yet, but I think this makes sense for LinkedIn. They have quite a few standalone apps that they are promoting, and I think this one is right up their alley.
LinkedIn Jobs. Yeah, because, okay, so this is actually really smart on LinkedIn's part, I feel like, because LinkedIn, as we've discussed so much in the last, I don't know, few months, is LinkedIn is really evolving into a place where it is about connecting on, you know, sort of a job level and recommending people based on skills and having a resume. But it's also, you know, a place for news. They've got their LinkedIn influencers who have, you know, a particular kind of inspirational almost sort of story section and give the rest of us good advice based on our career goals. But this is just straight up, I'd like to find a job. And yeah, being on LinkedIn, it's almost like Facebook in that way. Sometimes it's like, ooh, the overall LinkedIn experience, there's a lot going on. It might be a little overwhelming. So this is a way for the company to just give you one little tool, which of course is via mobile, because mobile is kind of the hot thing, what everybody wants to do right now. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really slick. I mean, and also it's free, which is great with most of their apps. They are free to use and pretty straightforward. So they also mentioned a stat in this article talking about how approximately 40% of people look for jobs on a regular basis online. So they know that that's definitely a captive audience. And I think the app will be very popular for them. And a lot of people will take advantage of it hunting for their next big job.
I've got all sorts of stuff to download. LinkedIn. We've got LinkedIn Pulse. We've got regular LinkedIn. I don't even see job. I guess I probably have to search for job search. Let's see. I know this is riveting stuff. Can Sarah use the... yep, here it is. LinkedIn job search. Yeah, all right. Very good. I don't need another job, but it'd be nice to know what it recommends to me based on my skill levels.
Well, it's always interesting just looking for jobs and seeing what's out there, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's funny with LinkedIn because it was so interesting. I just published my first blog post on LinkedIn. I guess it was last week or the week before because I got access to be a publisher. So I was like, okay, what am I going to write? I finally wrote something. And then I went in and looked at my profile views after I wrote that blog post, and they just skyrocketed and more people had contacted me. It felt like my network for the 3 or 4 days following that definitely increased substantially. So it kind of shows you the power of LinkedIn. And yet I tend to dismiss it as a platform over and over again. But I think when I look at engagement on Twitter and then look at LinkedIn, I mean, I had so much more engagement there than I've had on Twitter in literally months. So I think we're probably going to have to do a better job of talking more about it and figuring how it can be beneficial.
Absolutely. Sign in failed. Apparently I don't remember my own LinkedIn password.
I can never remember any of my passwords.
I can never remember any of my passwords. And people say, LinkedIn would like to know your current location. LinkedIn would like to send you push notifications. No, thank you.
No.
Ooh, okay.
No.
All right. So just real quick, why not? Job title. What am I? Host. This is not going to go well. Oh, radio host, talk show host, morning show host, casino host, show host. That's me. Petaluma, California. Why not? No jobs. Not a huge surprise. Let's change it to San Francisco because obviously it's, you know, slightly unusual that that I even have this job in Petaluma. So San Francisco Bay Area. Okay, go ahead and search. Show host. Okay, well, this is not exactly what I'm going for, but it is kind of fun to look at some of these, just kind of what it's surfacing to me. It's a lot of engineering jobs. Learn to code, kids. You will have lots of opportunities. iOS developer, Android developer, vice president of marketing. Ooh, channel marketing specialist. This is kind of neat. Again, I think this is a little bit, you know, it's a little strange because I don't really know what to search for because I have a weird job. But in general, yeah, if you've got an industry that you're interested in, this is a really nice way to just get a high-level understanding of what might be in your area. And you could, Amber, compare using something like Glassdoor. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm really on a roll here, don't I have Glassdoor on my phone? Oh, it might just be on my iPad. Glassdoor is a great service for finding out salary ranges for certain industries based on where you live. Yeah, so you could be like, well, okay, I'm interested in being an iOS developer. Okay, there are some jobs, and then you could use Glassdoor, and Glassdoor might say something like, well, based on the fact that, you know, we're looking at the zip code and other jobs that are like this, they have a web version as well, glassdoor.com, you know, you could ask for, you know, $50,000 a year or something like that. I'm just making up numbers. And that is really helpful, too, when you get into, like, the negotiating process, not just finding your dream job, but finding a job that's going to be your dream job once you start getting paychecks.
Yeah, and I think no matter what, even if you're using the app to look for a job, it's still important, and we've talked about this before on the show, to make sure that your LinkedIn profile is up to date, use a really great photo, and not a Facebook photo, but a professional looking photo, and fill out all your information, because we know that recruiters are constantly going to LinkedIn. I think it's like 95% of them use LinkedIn on a regular basis, so you still have to make your profile look good to you.
Yes, it's very true. Scooter X in chat says, LinkedIn just spams everybody, and that's... You know, I don't have that problem with LinkedIn. I do have the problem that I can't seem to turn off notifications. We talked to Guy Kawasaki about that a few weeks ago on a recent show. And, you know, it's nothing's perfect. But LinkedIn is definitely a force. And yeah, you know, the company is trying things out. They're big enough to be able to do that.
Yeah, they're testing it out.
You know, reminder before we get to our last couple of stories that we love hearing from all of you. You can always write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. That's our email box. You can leave us voicemails at 2626-SOCIAL. You can record a video, send it to us after you upload it somewhere. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less. Of course, Amber and I read your tweets diligently
week after week.
Yeah, reading them now. And anything that you want to contribute to the show, you help make the show. It's a social place. So thank you in advance. So, all right, what do we have? Oh, my goodness. We've got some late-breaking news, don't we?
So this is an this just came in recently. Just some quick little news about Netflix. I mean, Netflix, it seems every week they're talking about a new original series that they've bought or they're producing. This one is a bit of a surprise. I mean, I knew that Chelsea Handler, obviously the late night talk show, she had left the network she was working for. She's planning to leave this summer, and she was potentially looking at opportunities with Netflix, but this has just been confirmed. So it looks as though Netflix is launching its first talk show based on this article in early 2016 with Chelsea.
Oh my goodness.
That does say 2016, right, Sarah?
That does. Yeah.
Okay. So no news yet about the format of that late night talk show, but that's kind of a different direction for Netflix. They don't do a lot in that space today. It doesn't say, like I said, anything more about that, but that could be kind of interesting too.
Yeah. Well, and if, for those of you who are watching the show live, but if you're not watching the show live, this story will be a couple of weeks old. But yeah, so this is, you know, at the time of recording, this is brand new. It is interesting, Amber, and I'm actually in the process of going through the second season of Orange is the New Black, which is a Netflix original.
Too.
But it's a, you know, that's it's a scripted drama comedy, whatever it is. And it's interesting because I go both ways with the Netflix way of doing things, where they'll just kind of give you a whole season and you go through it whenever you feel like it on your own time. And I find that I really want to talk to other people about it, and they're just, it's like I'm on episode 4 or something like that of season 2, and it's like I don't know who's in the same spot as me, so I don't really want to talk about it on Twitter because it's just random. You know, it's not like Game of Thrones, where if you're watching it on Sunday night, you know, everybody can kind of have these reactions together. But if it was something like a talk show, and I think Chelsea Handler is very funny, whether you do or not, if it's something that's going to be regular on a nightly basis, this would, I think, if you like the show, it would keep a lot of people from wondering, well, why do I have a Netflix subscription when I really only like to binge watch, you know, House of Cards or Orange is the New Black? And there are months that go by where I don't have those shows because I'm done with them and I'm waiting for the next season. This seems like it would be a great way to keep people paying for Netflix month after month, because you're getting daily content or weekly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that, you know, if you have kids at home, you probably use Netflix on a daily basis just to watch all of the kids' content. And if you notice with Netflix and some of their announcements over the past couple of weeks, it isn't just about Chelsea Handler and late night talk shows, but also they've announced a few new kids' programs that they've either acquired or they're planning to produce. And they know that's a big market for them. But I couldn't agree more that I think this is an opportunity for viewers to engage with Netflix really on a daily basis and on an ongoing basis. I mean, there are people out there who just have the Comedy Network for The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, right? So I think with Netflix, it gives them that in with her, and it'll be interesting to see how they produce that content and get it out there in time, because they haven't done anything like this that has been produced daily. So it'll be fun to kind of watch how they manage that. It looks like they have a year and a half to do it, though.
Yeah, they've certainly got some time. I didn't know that she had ended her show on E!, probably because I don't watch enough television. But
I had heard about it. I mean, I didn't really watch it a lot, but I had heard that it had ended. And then there were reports pretty much immediately that she was having talks with Netflix. I mean, it seems like any content producer in this day and age would love to work with Netflix just because of their reach. And obviously they have deep pockets, too.
Yeah, that's genius. I don't know Netflix knows what they're doing. That is truly, I was thinking to myself, okay, well, when Orange is the New Black is over, we've got some time before House of Cards, what's stopping me from just not paying for Netflix each month, because I'm not really watching the movies on Netflix, and then just starting my subscription back up when I want it, and then, you know, binge watching a bunch of shows for 2 weeks, and then canceling it again. And this would be one of those things. Again, if I like the content. But yes, if you've got something that you're tuning in for, it just becomes, you know, it's its own cable network. Cable Network Plus. Where everything's on demand and you don't have to go through Comcast or whoever your cable subscriber would be, which is always my goal.
But then what are the cable companies thinking, right? I mean, traditionally, they've been able to have that programming, or the broadcast companies have that programming that got people tuning in on a daily basis. But all of a sudden, with Netflix starting to eat away at that, I mean, there's just so much disruption already happening in that space, and this is bound to kind of start to tip things as well.
It really is. Netflix is, they're gunning for HBO, but really it's more, you know, the traditional cable networks, especially with content like this. All right. Well, that's interesting. I think I'm going to be having a lot of conversations with people about Netflix based on this story. But based on our stories, we should probably finish up this show with a rad or fad, as we always do.
So this is an interesting one. I've said interesting way too many times in the show, so I got to stop saying that. But nonetheless, Lego Fusion has just launched. And what this is doing, the Lego company is taking traditional Lego, and they have developed an app so that kids can interact both in the digital world and in the physical world using Lego. At first, when you read this, you may think, oh, that's so cool, because there is that cool factor. I don't know about you, Sarah, but I have used quite a few of these apps that are made by toy makers, and they have the physical toy that interacts with the app. And I will say that it's very frustrating for kids to play some of these games. And one of the things that I loved and still love about Lego, because my son is 5 and a half now and he plays Lego all the time, is that there was really nothing technical about it, and it was totally tactile, and it got him away from the iPad. So I don't know if I'm a fan of this.
This seems like I've seen a couple of these before. Maybe it was like a Nintendo game, or there was something at E3. There's kind of physical things, and then you've got your iPad game or tablet game or whatever. A lot of it does seem sort of like, well, why? If you're building something that, yeah, you're actually touching with your hands and creating, I guess it's probably Lego's way of saying, we know that so many kids are just on tablets all day playing games and this and that, so this is a little bit of some sort of a hybrid between the two, so that they can get interested in Legos without feeling like they have to actually put down the computer or, you know, the smartphone or whatever. I guess that's what's going on. I mean, Legos are very different than they were when I was a little kid.
They are. I mean, I think that you really hit the nail on the head there, because they are absolutely so different than when we were kids. And there was much more free thinking, I think, in the Lego that we had with as kids, because you bought a bunch of Lego and you built whatever you could imagine, right? Today, if you look at the Lego kits in stores, I mean, I'm constantly buying these kits that are $30, $40, $50 because my son wants one tiny little character in them. And more, you have to build something very specific. And the app is following that direction. I mean, you are in some ways kind of forced to build something using your Lego blocks, and then the camera identifies that item. So you can imagine how precise you have to get when you're building. And I think it takes a little bit of that creativity away from kids. So I'm going to say that I don't really think this is rad. I think it's more of a fad of toy makers trying to have a digital component. But I would say that, hey, at some point, it's okay not to have that digital component. And it's nice that kids can have just a purely tactile experience.
I think so, too. I'm going to go ahead. I think you're onto something here. It doesn't always have to be, hey, let's take advantage of...
It doesn't.
And again, sometimes I feel like, you know, week after week, I'm like, we're just the old guard. We don't like change. We're like, Legos should not be tablet-based. But I think that they're, you know, and please, if somebody has built something really wonderful that they can, you know, send into us or screenshot or something, you know, that their kid or adult has made that's sort of using this hybrid experience, please do let us know. But it does seem like... It seems like a marketing effort more than it seems like the right thing for kids to learn how to build things.
I agree. And I would love to hear someone disagree and get their opinion. But I also think this pushes the Lego experience into an older child, because you have to be pretty advanced to be able to use the app and build and then use the camera and all those features. So I'm going to say it is a fad, and I don't know. I'm a fan of the good old Lego, Sarah.
The good old Lego days. You know, Amber, I always built the same thing over and over, though.
It was like, what did you build?
It would just be a house with trees. Because it was like, you know, it was like a big box of just regular old Legos. Okay. And then you'd have the green little squares were, you know, supposed to be like grass. And so I would build a house, and then there were like a couple little tree Legos, and then I'd put it all away, and then I'd do the same thing over and over. I don't know. I'm a creature of habit, I guess. That's why I'm not an architect.
Good luck finding those old school Legos.
Yeah. They're in my mother's attic somewhere. Yes.
Oh.
I was very insistent that none of my childhood toys get thrown away. Why?
That's probably good.
I don't know. maybe something would be worth something on eBay, since I clearly don't have kids of my own to pass them down to.
You should give them to someone else's kid, because literally my son right now has a tub of Lego that was Chris's when he was a little kid.
Oh, really?
And it's massive, and Connor loves it. So it's
there you go.
Someone would appreciate it.
I think so. Yeah, I have to stop hoarding my childhood toys. It's clearly not doing anything for anybody except taking up some space. Well, Amber, I think we've come to the end of our very social hour, which, again, just a reminder, we pre-recorded. So if you are not watching this live or listening to this live, it was from a couple of weeks ago. There might be some crazy social news that we're not mentioning. And that's why, because we're coming to you from the future when it didn't exist yet. No, the past. I don't know. Something like that. There's some time travel involved in this show. I'm just not sure which way we're going. But it was fun. It was absolutely fun. And for those of you who are joining us live, we will be doing a social hour at our regular time. Our regular time is recorded on Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, our website, where you can read all of the articles that we reference, our show notes, archived shows, is all at twit.tv/TSH. Yeah, you can see the number to contact, and yeah, you get the little subscription links. It's great. We've had a extremely good run with guests lately, so if you've missed any of those, really encourage you to watch. They're usually in the first 15 minutes or so of our show. We've just had some really, really interesting guests, and I don't know. It's been a great couple of months on the social hour, Amber.
It has. And I have to say that Guy Kawasaki was on recently talking about Canva. And I used Canva earlier this week to create a presentation. And it's awesome. It's a very cool little tool.
It really is. Yeah. If you at all are inclined to put together something that looks nice and snappy design-wise and could use some help template-wise, that is such a good place to start. All right, Amber. Well, what do you have going on in the next week? Anything crazy before we meet again?
Not too much, no, sir. Just more of the same. Enjoying beautiful weather, and have my head in my phone, waiting for the next big social story.
Very good. Me too. Good. Between the two of us, we'll miss nothing. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening to Social Hour. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane,
and I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.